we want to talk about this whole concept of mentorship and how it affects you. And one of the things we're going to talk about today is just how do you get started? How do you get started in such a way that you can identify and certainly evaluate some of the people you'd like to have give value and substance to your life? And so I want to talk about some common misconceptions around mentorship that I think exist and certainly how you can overcome it. Because if you go into this wrong, I think you're going to have a wrong outcome. You really have to have a game plan. And so I'd like to lay out some key steps for you to think about that many people have misconceptions about that I think just cause them to go in a bad direction. So first of all, let's talk about what the misconceptions are. Number one, one of the common misconceptions is that mentoring is all about me. It's all about my needs, my wants, my desires, and nothing could be further from the truth. Yes, the mentee or the one being mentored certainly receives value, but you have to believe that if you don't bring value to the equation, if you don't bring value to the table in some sort of way, that it's just an all take and no give kind of process, and it really falls flat. So I really want you to think about this. This is not about you. It's about your ability to be able to possess things you currently don't have. And that's that kind of qualities and kind of skills and kind of abilities that many people don't ever possess because they don't know how to even ask the right questions. And we'll get into that later. Number two, one of the misconceptions is you need to wait for them, that I need to wait for the mentor to find me. You know, so many people, I think, wander around trying to figure things out. So they think, well, you know, I'd like to be mentored, but I've got to wait until I find the right person. And usually they sit around waiting for that person to find them instead of actively seeking the kind of individual that would teach them the things that they need to know in order to grow. And I see this happen so many times. Either we get into it by luck or we get into it by purpose. And I would say to each of you that one of the things you need to do is you need to purposefully look for that kind of mentor that is going to have value for you. Not every mentor will. And you got to be the one that decides some of the things you really want to know, some of the things that you don't have, and some of the things you'd like to possess in order to be able to find the right person. Number three, that we think of mentoring as being more passive than active. And it is not a passive process. You cannot wait at home and think that some mentor is going to find you. It just isn't going to happen. One of the things I really like to see is someone who's actively pursuing another individual. The people I have mentored are the ones who have come to me actively pursuing some things in their life. Look, I'm a busy guy. I have a business to run. I'm not actively pursuing people that I need to mentor, but I'm certainly open to that idea. But it's one of these things that if I'm going to do it, it's got to be worth my time from a standpoint of not having to drag and push and pull people to success that just really don't want to get there. And so it's this active idea that it's more active than passive. And number four, one of the common misconceptions is that I need to go ask someone. And that by asking somebody, that becomes very, very apparent. I'm going to get into this in just a little bit, but it isn't that you don't want to ask, but there's so much upfront stuff that has to happen before the ask occurs that really makes a difference. So today, what we want to do is we want to deal with some of these things that happen from a standpoint of identification of the way in which a person should go, and when you follow the right path, you wind up with the right results. So what I'd like to do is read 1 Timothy 4:12. Because to me, everything is always laid out in the Bible. You know, it's one of these things where when you don't know where to go, go to Scripture, and Scripture has a great way of teaching us what to do. And 1 Timothy 4:12 is so important for young men and young women to understand. And it's one of the most often overlooked passages in the Bible. And it says this, "Let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example of the believers in word, in conversation, in charity, in faith, and in purity." I bet I know that many of you have read that a number of times. But I want to ask you, when you think of speech, life, love, faith, and purity, that these are the ones that Paul says to Timothy, don't let anyone look down on you because of your youth. But do what? Set an example. Now, why should we set an example? Well, I believe that Paul was telling Timothy that if you possess certain qualities, people will be attracted to you. If you possess certain qualities, other people will want to help you. And you actually people are repelled by behavior that doesn't exhibit these qualities. Think of rebels that you know. I certainly am not attracted to a rebel. As somebody who could mentor another person, yes, would I like to help them? Absolutely, but rebels don't want to know. I'd like to help people, but they don't even know what question to ask. It's far easier and more helpful for me to have somebody who wants to pursue a path and wants to get there, but they just don't know how, but they're open. And I will tell you that these five things are five things that every single one of you young people ought to really understand about how to do. Let's talk about each one of them. Why would Paul say, set an example in your speech? You know, one of the things that I'm fascinated by with young people today is, number one, many of them don't know how to talk. You know how to talk, but I'm not talking about just blah, blah, blah. I'm really talking about how do you carry on good conversation? How do you really talk to somebody in a way that they would be interested in you? Let me just share with you something. If you want people interested in you, you have to be interesting to talk to. We want people interested, but we don't want to be interesting. And it isn't fun to talk to somebody who's self-absorbed. It isn't fun to talk to somebody who thinks they have it all together. It is really a lot of fun to talk to somebody who really has an active desire to know. And I will say to you that we place a low value many times on diction, on enunciation, on the way in which we sound, how we say things. And I will say that Paul knew that with Timothy because he was wanting Timothy to have a powerful influence. And without proper speech, people are repelled. Just think about it. If I was up here using gutter language or language that was just straight off the street, how interesting would I be? Well, you might say I'd be very interesting, at least entertaining. But the reality of it is that my message wouldn't come through very loud and clear because of the speech that I was using. And he says, if you use the right speech, you will have powerful influence over people. Isn't it true that we respect those who speak well? We respect those who use good language? And when we don't, I will tell you, it causes an enormous harm in a number of areas. So speech is very important. Set an example for the believers in what? Life. How you live your life is so important to your ability to be able to have ongoing success. We don't think about this very often. In fact, as young people, you know, I was a young person, I just kind of did life. I mean, life found me. I just kind of, you know, did whatever came along. And I really didn't think a lot about it. And I will tell you, as I look back on my life, I look at it in a way that says, boy, I wish I would have known some things back here because it would cause me a whole lot of easier time. It would have been easier for me to do things and to live a more Christ-like life if I had known some of the things that existed. But my life was not good. And if we can change the way our life appears to those around us, we can have powerful influence over people. Paul wanted Timothy to have influence over people. And if you think about it, the way we create influence is by the way in which we talk and the way we live our life. Number three, love. What is that? Well, love to me is not the kind of love that a husband has necessarily for his wife, but it's that extension of what I call heart, that ability to be able to care about people in such a way that it comes across as genuine. And whenever I see a young person who has a real heart, a heart for God, a heart for others, it becomes so easy to want to help them in so many ways because you know that when you do, you're working with somebody that's going to go out and have a powerful impact on those around them. Number four, faith. Faith plays an enormous part not only in our relationship with God, but also how we make practical application of life. I have to have faith in so many different things. And it's the faith that comes through our ability to be able to know exactly what to do and have predictability. It's that predictability that enables me to take risks. It's that predictability that enables me to be able to make decisions that I'm not necessarily sure what the outcome will be, but I have faith that if I've applied the right principles, that the outcome will take care of itself. And that's what Paul's talking about with Timothy, is that applied faith. Not just saying, I have faith, but application of faith in the things that we do and the decisions we make. And number five, purity. Nothing speaks louder in words and in deeds than a pure life. one that has remained pure and undefiled. And that is what God talks about. And I will tell you, in our day and age, purity is absolutely one of those things that is put aside and not respected at all. And I think it's the great tragedy of life. But you know what? Even some of the most some of the people I know who are non-believers, they always look at elements of purity and they hold it in high regard. Both of my daughters were married, and when they got married, their first kiss was at the wedding altar. And I had friends that came from outside, even my own parents, that were stunned by that. They were stunned by the ability for two young people to remain pure until they got married. And to me, it speaks volumes. And the testimony that comes as a result of that is just amazing. So God says, these are the things, these five things. And if you want a place to start, the place to start is to look at these five things and ask yourselves, how many of those do I possess? And who do I know that can help me get there? And if we concentrate on these five things, even with a mentor that can help us in our speech, in our life, in our love, in our faith, in our purity, isn't that kind of everything that we need? And when we think about it, it becomes pretty awesome when you stop and think, if I possessed those five things and became a master at those five things, how good would my life be? Let's think about it from an application point of view. I know way too many young people who sit for lengths of time trying to figure out what they want to do. You know, they've gone to school, they've got their degrees, they've done their study, and now they look down the path and they say, okay, it's time for me to decide I need to be a, and fill in the blank. I need to be an accountant. I need to be an astronaut. I need to be a fireman. I need to be a policeman. Whatever it is. And we think that we have to pick a job. And I will tell you that when I came out of school, I wanted to be a lawyer. And you know, about the time I went to, I got accepted to law school, that all changed. And now I wanted to be something else. And pretty soon I was caught up in this trap of trying to figure out what I wanted to do rather than who I wanted to become. And there is a difference. If I become this, the choice of doing widens and it really doesn't matter. There are just certain qualities a person has to possess. But as we go back and think about these things, it's important to find people in our lives that can help us achieve that. So I want to talk to you a little bit about how do you go about this. Because if I don't bring it down to some semblance of pathway to follow, it becomes a little bit mystical, and I want to demystify it. Number one, so take some notes on this, because there's seven things I think you got to go through. Number one, I think you need to survey your landscape and find someone that you want to be like. I'm sure you probably already thought about that. I'd like to be like him. I've got to be like her. There are people you have seen that you would like to be like. But just because you'd like to be like them doesn't necessarily mean that you should. I think there's more to it than just wanting to be like somebody. You have to really observe them. You know, have you ever talked with somebody on the phone, and then you met them 2 days later, and you had to take a double take? Has that ever happened? What did we do? We formed the picture of what that person would look like in our mind because we couldn't see them, and then all of a sudden, we see them, and the picture is completely different, and we have to do a double take. It happens all the time. And you see, sometimes we're more influenced by the things that we hear than by the things that we see. And I will say that as you think about what happens in life, we need to be both hear and see. Really study a person. Study a person in the areas of who they are, what they do, why you want to become like them, and what do they possess that you don't have. Now, number two, you got to study them. You got to study them with your eyes and your ears. You have to really look to see if they had influence in your life. Would it be the kind of influence that would help you? Or would it be the kind of influence that hurts you? Things can look really great on the surface, but until you've really studied that person, it really makes a difference. I'm a behaviorist. That's what I do. I watch people. I watch people and study it. Study what causes them to do certain things. The ones I love are the ones that always tell me goals. Have you ever heard somebody say, I want to do something. I want to lose weight. That's the common one around the first year, right? I want to lose weight. And you say, how much weight? Oh, I want to lose some weight. Great. And every time you see them, they're at the refrigerator eating. you can pretty well assume that what they say they want is not what they're doing. And there's this common problem of people saying one thing and doing another, and God warns us to be on the lookout for those who are hypocritical. And that's what I'm concerned about in many instances. People who say one thing and do another. And if you're going to gravitate to somebody who's a hypocrite, you're probably not going to get the kind of mentorship that you would like. So study that person. Make sure you see the kinds of things in that person's life that you would want to possess. Number three is called make the ask. In other words, you need to go ask them about themselves. Not ask them to be mentored, but ask them some questions that would get to the heart of their life. A young man came to me the other day and he said, I'm interested in receiving mentorship and I'm considering you, but I need to ask you some questions. And I thought, he's qualifying me? I should be qualifying him. But I was taken back by the nature of the questions that he asked. And he began to start asking me questions about what I believed. What were my values? Why did I believe the way I did? What was it about my family that I found to be the most important aspect of raising children? And I was stunned by the nature of the questions he asked me. And it moved from this whole qualification aspect that I thought he was doing to I'm sharing with him what drives me, what motivates me, why I do the things I do. And he's making an evaluation. Is that the kind of things he wants to learn? But he's doing it through asking questions in such a way that he learns so much about me that gives him an ability to be able to evaluate, is that the kind of leadership I want to follow? Is that the kind of mentorship I want to study under? Number four, I think the best thing that any of you can do is evaluate the fruit. If you take a look at a person's life, you can take a look at my life and you can say, okay, I really like some things about that person's life. I'm saying to you, look at their fruit. You ought to be looking at their children. That's who you ought to be looking at. If you were to ask me to mentor you, you shouldn't be just looking at me. Look at my fruit. God says what? By your fruit, you'll know them. I'm saying to you, by their fruit, you'll know whether they're a proper mentor or not. I am stunned at the number of people who have really great qualities and really good ideas whose fruit is bad. How many pastors do we know that have all the right message, but their fruit has gone awry? And I will tell you that it's in their fruit that will show you whether wisdom really exists within the part of the person that you're interested in having mentor you. Number five, I think you got to have, instead of asking somebody to mentor you, I think you have to let that relationship really evolve organically. I can think of two or three young men that I have mentored over the course of the last few years. And I will say to you, it wasn't something just had a start and a stop. It was developed over a friendship. It was one of these things where I became friends with this young man before I ever even knew I was involved in mentoring him. I just liked them. I liked what they did. I liked what they believed. I liked what they spoke about. I liked the direction they were heading. And I felt a complete obligation to want to help them. And it didn't feel to me like work. It didn't feel to me like I was taking time I didn't have. It really felt like I was investing in a young man that really was going to take what I was sharing with him and take it to the next level and become better in some cases at it than I was. And so we have to let these relationships evolve organically. The only way that can happen is you've got to take an active pursuit. Remember, I said one of the misconceptions is that mentorship is more passive than active, and it is contrary. It is not true. It is a very active relationship that must take place. And you as the mentee must pursue that. But you pursue it on a relationship process, not on a seeking of information or seeking of feedback. Number six, I think of all the things that a young person could do is to seek somebody who's going to absolutely be candid and be open and honest. How much honest feedback do we really ever get? Think about it. I'm sure you get it from some members of your family, but the reality of it is that very few times in life do people really give you open and candid feedback and tell you that things that you just may not want to hear, but when you hear it, you know it's probably true. I will tell you, that's the greatest testament of a good friend. And I take that job very seriously when I'm mentoring somebody. It's not I give them all the things they want to hear. I want to protect them from things that they're going to face down the road. Here's what I found in life. I found myself saying, if I can just get through this, life's going to be okay. Have you ever caught yourself saying that? If I can just get through this problem, life's going to be okay. And what I found out is, man, it's not okay. It's just prepping me for the next thing that's going to happen. And then what I find out is the things get progressively worse. And about the third one, you're wishing for that thing back here that you had. And you're thinking, oh my goodness, life is a preparation for the things to come. And if you don't learn those lessons early, what happens is you wind up in real trouble down the road. Life is a preparation for things to come. And you know what? Mentors can help you change that. Mentors can prepare you in ways that you'll never find out for yourself. I had to learn in many instances by just doing. I had to learn in many instances by having a 2x4 hit me up against the head. I had to learn by hook and by crook. And I will tell you, it takes longer, and you're not necessarily going to learn the lessons unless you happen to get lucky and find them. I will tell you, mentors can have a huge and powerful influence on taking what normally takes this amount of time and compressing the time frames so you wind up arriving earlier than you ever could. And I will tell you, it helps in the areas of wisdom and growth. And the last one is, you have to commit. Commitment is one of those things that's very difficult to do. And I don't know why so many young people have trouble with commitment. Oh, you like the idea of it. How many people really like the idea of losing weight? Everybody likes the idea of it. But the reality of it is, just liking the idea of it doesn't make it happen. You've got to completely and radically change what you do. You have to take a different step in a different direction for anything to occur of value. And there's got to be that commitment that says, I'm going to take a step in commitment, knowing that if I follow the principles, that I will find what it is I desire. I get so weary of people who are paralyzed by analysis. You know, it's paralysis of analysis that happens in our lives. And we get so paralyzed by trying to figure out every little thing down the road when really what we need to do is take a step. Just take a step. How many things do you need in life no matter what you do? All five of these things. You need all five of these no matter what you do. But it's taking a step to go find them. And we get so paralyzed by trying to analyze all the things that are required to do a certain job when we really need to be focused on the qualities and possession of characteristics and values and methods and knowledge and skill that's required that actually opens up our opportunities. Maybe, just maybe, we are so closed off from opportunities because we don't possess the kinds of things that we need to in order to have opportunities find us. I've said this so many times before, and I am living proof of this, that if you become an expert at what it is that you do, people will beat a path to your door. Let me share with you a little twist on this. I'm convinced about it, is this. If you will possess, if you will go after the kind of qualities that anyone would want to have in another person, people will beat a path to your door because you'll find that it is so rare that we come across young people who have possession of these kinds of qualities. I will tell you that it's not hard to have success, but it is hard to know where to look. And if you can ever find the right person who can help you lead you there, it really is kind of remarkable. I am so excited about some of the young men I'm working with that they're going to have opportunities, they're going to have careers, they're going to have it done early in life, far earlier than I ever would have seen. And the reason is because they now know things that they didn't know. I'm convinced about something. You know, it's not the things that we know that kind of hurt us. And it's really not the things we don't know. It's that third dimension. That third dimension that involves the things we don't know that we don't know. And when we don't know what we don't know, we don't even know how to look. You want value brought to your life? Find somebody who can help you with the things you don't know you don't know. And if you find that pretty quick, then what happens is you now know where to look. You may not have all the answers, but you'll at least have direction. I used to work with a group, Outward Bound. We used to take people up to some of the tallest mountains in Colorado. I've climbed Mount Elbert, Mount Yale, Mount La Plata, Mount Harvard, 14,000 foot peaks. And I was really excited about it. You know, I was in the Boy Scouts, and now I was married, and you know, I thought, man, how it must be pretty easy to climb mountains. And so I went out there, and I didn't prepare real well. And when I saw the mountain, I went, whoa, we're going up there. And you know, you think, oh, okay. And you got a 40-pound back on your back, and you're thinking, okay. And I had never succumbed to something called altitude sickness. I don't know if you've ever had altitude sickness, but for some reason, I got altitude sickness. And I will tell you, it's the closest thing to male childbirth that I can think of. Now, I'm not a real expert in this, okay? But I will say to you that the whole way up the mountain, you are feeling like you're just gonna throw up every time. And it's like turning your insides outside. And so the way it work, which it works, you go to kind of low camp, then you go to mid camp, then you go to high camp. And high camp is a place called Treeline. You know why it's called Treeline? Because there's no trees. And you know why there are no trees? Because there's no oxygen. And you know, when there's no oxygen, you know, you have to acclimate. And so it's one of these things where you're like, okay, I can't get my breath. And so you acclimate at Treeline, and then for a day, and then you go up and down, up to the summit and back all in one day. It takes you about 11 hours to get up and about 4 to 5 hours to get down, because you come down faster than you go up. And so I made it up to Treeline. I remember we're going up, and we're taking step after step, and I am just not having a good day. I take a few steps, and of course, you know, these young guys are coming by. Come on, Mr. Dell. I want to come back here, and I'll, you know, because I wasn't feeling real good. And so one of the men on the trip, he saw me struggling, and I finally looked at him and said, you know what? I cannot go any farther. I want you to dig a hole, put me in, put the marker on, and just tell my wife where to find the body, because I am not going any farther. And he came back and he said something to me that I'll never forget. He said, Steve, he says, I know you're tired and you're probably not going to get to the top of the mountain, but I want to ask you one question. Do you have enough energy to take the next step? I said, look, I'm about to die. Don't ask me questions. He said, no, seriously, can you take your foot from here and put it there? I said, yes, anybody can do that. He said, we'll do it. I said, okay, now you're happy? Now let me die in peace. And he said to me, he said, I know you're tired and you're probably not going to get to the top of your mountain, but I want to ask you, do you have enough energy to take the next step? And we played that game all the way to the top of the mountain. Now, I will tell you, when you're at the top of the mountain looking down, the trip looks worth it. But when you're at the bottom of the mountain looking up, you're not sure you want to go. Some of you are at the bottom of the mountain looking up, and you're not sure you want to go. And here's what I'm telling you. Don't worry about the top of the mountain. Worry about taking the next step. The step is really easy to take. Take a step. It's not what to do. Take a step to find something. You know what? It doesn't matter what you do. It matters the qualities you possess. And that step that you take is a step in faith. And when you possess a life that is good speech, good life, good love, good faith, and good purity, tell me anything that's better than that. You can take a step in those things, and God will reward you with your future. God will show you the path to follow if you'll take the steps in faith that will allow you to possess the qualities that God would want you to possess in order to do the things you want to do. God bless you. Thank you.